Up next on episode 87 of Stack Overflow, Joel and Jeff sit down with their new community coordinator, Robert Carteno, to discuss the future of Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange 2.0 from IT Conversations.
Skype doesn't do multicast video.
Seriously? It's just like you can't even...
Only point to point.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Well, you knew that from the VC call, remember?
I don't know. I've never had video before. Wait, why does it say missed conference call? Oh, because that was at the other computer. I got Skype logged on to two computers. I got a whole new setup this week. Hey, welcome to Stack Overflow podcast number XX.
87, maybe?
X. No, this is a special. It's like a special edition. It's like we've broken the interregnum.
Oh, it's kind of like when the Eagles got back together.
Or like the Simon and Garfunkel concert in Central Park.
That's right. I believe the title was Hell Freezes Over.
The Eagles one?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. Pigs Flying is another good one. Oh, my God. Why are they making that noise in the kitchen? Hold on. We have with us audience today a special guest, Robert Carteno. Have we ever announced, like,
no.
To the public at large?
We have not. Anonymous.
Not yet, but we want to. We will. Yeah, it's in the works. By the time this podcast is published, it should be known.
Excellent plan. Robert is the new community manager, although I don't know what title we're actually going to put on his business card for Stack Overflow Incorporated.
I've been putting community coordinator. I don't know if that's apt, but it seems to work for now.
Coordinator, okay. Or you know, coach, team leader, contessa. I always say any title you think is appropriate, you can have.
That's right.
And so, I guess my job today is to laugh at Joel's joke, so...
So Jeff doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Joel's jokes are too subtle sometimes. I don't actually get them until like afterwards when I'm listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, then if you want, I'll just...
Contessa!
We just have to splice them back in after the fact.
That's right. We need a laugh track.
I will sometimes do that in the post-production. I'll take Jeff's laughs and I'll move them to other places in the podcast.
So now we know the secret.
No, I don't think Joel does that. So let me talk briefly about why Robert is a member of the team. I think this fits well with, we're going to get heavily into Stack Exchange 2.0 today and what that's about, and hopefully a lot of Q&A about that, ideally. But certainly one thing we've learned with Stack Overflow and SuperUser and Serverfall is that the software part is, I don't want to say it's trivial because it's not. I mean, software is what we do, but that ends up being the easier part of the challenge. The real challenge in building community is the sociological and urban planning aspects of, like, how do you have a community that doesn't blow up and doesn't, people don't kill each other.
Or even worse, nobody goes to because they don't care enough.
Or it's a ghost town and nobody cares and there's litter all over the streets. I mean, these are like urban planning problems. And I think that's what, if we've gotten good at anything, it's not like, you know, compiling code. It's hopefully that we've sort of figured out, at least for some kinds of community, not like every community in the world, but for some kind of communities, we've come up with a new tool, a screwdriver or a pipe wrench, whatever fits, that seems to work really well. And the software does part of it, but the growing the community part is that's what Stack Exchange 2.0 is all about. It's like, how do you put rules and guidelines around how would I build a community of people interested in topic X? And that is what we're going to get good at. And that is why Robert is going to be so pivotal, because he's doing sociology, basically. He's helping us figure out, like, what's working, what's not working, it's working, why it's not working.
More like social work than sociology.
Anthropology.
You get your job, Robert, is to find the homeless guy who's also crazy and probably has cancer and get him help for all of his problems. Even though he doesn't want to be helped and he's blabbing on about something about the Kennedys.
Well, when we were in New York, Joel, there was some guy that came into a store and followed us and was yelling at us because he felt like we were taking pictures of him.
Okay, so, question. Were you taking pictures of him?
No, we weren't. Just the guy had some issues, obviously. So.
Yeah, okay.
That does actually happen. You joke about that, but that actually happened to us in New York City. That was kind of weird. I also want to emphasize that Robert is indeed technical. I don't think we'll ever hire anybody for the company that isn't fairly deeply technical. Mm-hmm. Robert is a programmer like us. Mm-hmm. But I think, Robert, you have a pretty deep background in some of this stuff, right? Like, I mean, you've been doing since the BBS days.
Yeah, I wrote my first BBS. I didn't write the first one, but I did write the first successful one. So I have a pretty low-level understanding of, you know, what it takes to get one of these systems huge and databases working and that sort of thing. So I hope I can bring some of that experience or at least pass it on to customers when they ask for crazy features that I just know aren't doable always.
Yeah.
So,
speaking of crazy features.
Yeah, you know, people ask for things, but, you know, sometimes it's just not practical. But
they're not possible.
I'm amazed at some of the stuff you guys get in there and that it works. I mean, there's some crazy database queries, I'm sure.
I'm amazed that it's fast, because you can just tell that there are a lot of database queries on every page.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen feature requests come through, and I'd be just like, oh, my God, there's no way they can do that.
I started programming for the web, and it was the Netscape web server and C. Might have been C++. And RogueWave had some libraries from C++, so you could do advanced things like use strings. And we were talking to a Sybase database, and I remember saying, you know what, my goal is going to be one query per page. No more than that. You cannot get good performance if you do more than one query per page, and so I will structure my databases in such a way that you can usually construct an entire page with the one query. Sigh. That never...
Well, there's actually some new theory on that the network and the databases and the infrastructure is so fast now, and they do this coalescing thing. Mm-hmm. Where even if you send lots of small queries through, because they're small, I mean, this is like queuing theory. If you have really small units of work, this is like RISC versus, sure, you know, CISC again. So you have really small units of work. Actually, that can move through the pipeline quite rapidly.
You don't have to wait for the result.
But my point is, if you take it to extremes, it's probably bad. If you say, okay, we're only going to do one query per page, but your query is like this Mongo 1000 line abomination that, like, you know, it has to take forever to parse, and there's a point in diminishing returns. Or you could do, I'm going to do 100 queries of select, you know, field from where ID equals X, you know, which is a very trivial query.
Right.
Oddly enough, I agree with you. I've always tended to defer to the side of try to do fewer queries. But what we found with some of the link stuff is that it's not that it does too many queries. It does very simplistic small queries. And that turns out to be okay-ish.
Yeah.
On Stack Overflow. So
No, I just think technology has changed since 1995. I mean, the other thing that I remember was that we couldn't rely on connection pooling. In fact, I don't even think we had connection pooling the first time. So every query was a database login, and then do the query and then log out. We lost
Robert.
That
sounds really painful.
Oh, Robert, where did you go? How do you get him back?
I'll let him back in. Hold on.
Oh, you're the organizer.
Yes, I will bring him back in. I am calling him now. That's okay. With all their blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, he probably just lost interest. He probably fell asleep and accidentally knocked the phone off the hook.
I'm trying to add him, so.
And that is why the world is banana-shaped.
Well, while I'm doing this, did you want to start with any questions on Meta?
Yes. So basically, the reason we're doing this special podcast, even though we're in hiatus and whatnot, is because we sort of made a big announcement, which some of the podcast listeners may have just completely missed if you only listen to the podcast, which is a couple of pretty major changes in direction under Stack Exchange, or to use a Dave Weiner term, a corner turn. Basically, what we're going to be doing in the future is about 45 degrees different than what we did in the past with Stack Exchange. Now, to bring everybody totally up to speed, Stack Exchange is the white label version of Stack Overflow that allows theoretically anybody to come along and give us a credit card, and we'll sell you the software that we use to make Stack Overflow, usually on a hosted basis where we host it for you, and you can make any kind of community you want in exchange for a small monthly fee. And what we found is that worked surprisingly well in a couple of, well, not surprisingly, it worked well in a couple of dozen instances where it created dynamic and awesome sites. But it just was not really working. You couldn't really say, I don't think we were really happy with the growth and the penetration that we were getting with those few communities that were getting created on the Stack Exchange model. And so basically the corner turn was this. First of all, we're going to stop charging for it. Originally the price started at $129 a month, and we just sort of decided, and that kind of makes sense when you compare it to other software as a service type things. I don't know, it's kind of expensive, but that's sort of what we estimated it would cost. And we're going to stop charging for it, and that makes it much easier to create communities. And then simultaneously, instead of just letting sort of individual entrepreneurs create the communities, we're going to let communities create the communities. So we're trying to set up a process that almost feels like a democratic process in some ways, in which people kind of vote for communities that they want to see created, and then we'll create them. And the difference is that we'll own them. So a bunch of the people that were involved in Stack Overflow 1.0, basically, sort of had an entrepreneurial bent, and they were trying to create little businesses, and we'll pretty much allow them to continue as long as they have some level of traffic, and as long as we can continue to do so.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
So let's clarify one question that came up. Is the concept of ownership and whether we're going to do this revenue sharing thing. And
yeah.
The more I thought about this, the more I realized that we're walking that line between being a for-profit company and a non-profit company. So let me draw some lines around some boundaries. So Wikipedia is a nonprofit.
Right.
So they've set that boundary. Craigslist is a for-profit company.
Right.
But offers a public service.
Yeah.
To which I would point out there is no visibility as to how that is governed whatsoever.
Right. They very secretly get together in a room, the 12 of them, and do whatever the hell they want.
Right. Well, that's – I mean, I'm sure they don't, but the point is that there's no visibility. So who knows? Who knows how it's run? And then, of course, there's obviously Google, which a lot of people think of as a public good, even though they're very much a commercial business. Mm-hmm. So those would be some of the boundaries around the topic that we're discussing. But I think we want – at least I, the more I thought about this, I believe we want to behave like – we have the goals of a nonprofit company. I mean, money is necessary to run the business. Mm-hmm. Money is necessary to keep the servers powered. Money is necessary to pay awesome programmers to work on this and pay awesome people like Robert to help us manage it. And, the sales stuff that we drive
yep.
the engine forward with. And we're going to continue to improve the platform and roll those improvements out to everybody. Like right now we're working on an API, which means you'll be able to develop an API against any site that's on the engine. And I think another big part of that is I want to continue this yearly donation thing where we give back to the community for Stack Overflow. I mean, I think we want to continue to do that, but I don't think we ever want to directly pay people. I think money is such a weird motivator. Like, I think right. that with Stack Exchange, the idea that you pay $120, $9 a month and you get this service was the wrong motivator.
Exactly.
For actually exactly. building community.
It was more. Not. It was getting the. It was getting. It was getting a much smaller group of people. We were getting the people that we were getting the intersection of people who had a great idea and people who wanted to make an entrepreneurial kind of start a business around that idea or already had a business around that idea. And what we really want to get is everybody who has a great idea and can get an audience for that idea. So we're sort of making it much more liberal, and as such, we're taking exactly what you described with Craigslist, an approach of like trying to create government really around this new public resource. And the public resource, just so I'm clear, all the content on the new Stack Exchange, just like Stack Overflow, is all we believe is owned by. I mean, the copyright is literally owned by the community, so it's under that Creative Commons license. So, and we make data dumps available of it, so that the people that contribute all that content are the community, and they have to own it. Now, we're going to be, displaying it on a web page and allowing people to interact with it. And in the very, very long term, we believe that we'll be able to find organic, useful ways that we can benefit people by making money.
Well, there are already, I want to point out there are already benefits because this has come up a couple times, and I think it's weird. And maybe Stack Exchange, it was actually sending people in the wrong direction in terms of the wrong message.
Right.
But the benefits that you get from participating in Stack Overflow are you're the one showing off your knowledge. So we're not saying go to Stack Overflow because we provide the answer. We're saying go to Stack Overflow because these awesome programmers hang out there who know just everything.
Yeah.
You know? They're geniuses, right? I mean, we're showing off your talent and your ability. It has never really been about us. It's not like, you know, Joel Spolsky Stack Overflow or Jeff Atwood Stack Overflow.
Right.
And I love telling people the story, but the guy that met us at the airport who recognized our Stack Overflow logo but had no idea who Joel was or who I was. Right. I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly how it's supposed to be because it's about the community is awesome, not us, not the website.
We should put our names on the front page somewhere, right?
If you go to the about page, it gives some of the information about like who created this and where it come from. But we also have the community moderators on there too, right?
It's not just us. And it's more about the community moderators. And especially with these new Stack Exchanges that are created by the community, those moderators and the administrators of those communities and the people that get those communities off the ground have to be from the community because, you know, I can't do anything about the Siberian Husky community. I don't know anything about Siberian Huskies. Mine has diarrhea and won't go in his crate, you know? So I'm the last person you want to be asking.
I don't want to go over to your house
do not want to be asking me how to raise a puppy. But and then there are these other communities that we don't understand. You know, we came up with a thought exercise of like how one of these days there's going to be a question and answer site on the Stack Exchange platform on Stack Overflow. Or Stack Exchange, I guess we're calling it now, that is in a language that none of us understand. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to have a lot of traffic, and it will be providing useful services to millions of people and getting them answers to their questions, you know, deep technical answers to very difficult questions on some topic that we may not even know what that topic is. And then, you know, we'll be able to ask somebody, and they'll tell us, oh, this is about blah, blah, and we'll say, what the hell is that? And they'll say it's, you know, some kind of a Vietnamese festival that happens every 3 years. And we'll say, that's friggin' awesome. Why so many questions? And like, no, very valuable. It's making a big benefit to a community of Viet. And we'll just say, okay, that's great. That's why we made the site. And that has to happen really without us understanding that there is a need for that question and answer board. I don't really want to say we're referring to them as communities sort of. And although we are all about building communities and that's the hard part, the truth is, we're even more than we're about communities, we're about getting answers to your questions. We're not here so that you can socialize with other people or so that you can meet other people that share your interests. We're here so that you can get answers.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very Q&A-directed thing. One final bit I want to bring in when people are talking about, you know, what are the financial incentives for people to participate? I don't think there should be because it's a perverse incentive.
Yeah.
It actually kind of ruins the thing you're trying to create. But you already get a lot of very nice benefits from participating on Stack Overflow or Super User Service.
Oh, it doesn't. The truth is, I don't want to cut you off. It is not even worth having this argument because the proof is in the pudding. You know, the people that are saying nobody's going to participate in these communities if they can't make money off of them have not looked at Stack Overflow. Stack Overflow has 6.5 million people participating from around the world every month. Well, maybe the network, including ServerFault and SuperUser. And none of them are profiting from it except for, you know, a few dozen people who've gotten jobs.
Well, I think, Joel, this goes back to your point of, like, how do you control your identity online? You control your identity online by putting good information out with your name attached to it. Mm-hmm. And that is what our engine does. It lets you show off. Look at these really great questions I've asked, answers I've provided. I just had lunch with a guy today. He's like, you know, we hired a guy from Stack Overflow, basically, not through careers, but through jobs. And I was able to look at his Stack Overflow profile and get a real good sense of what this person would be like to work with, what he knows, how he communicates. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get all those benefits already from just participating. So I think it's maybe it's a straw man argument to say, well, what's the benefit to me for participating? Because you can look at sites like, you know, Mahalo, which now has some kind of crazy explicit revenue share program.
There's like a little bit of Mahalo currency, which you can trade in for, you know, gifts and prizes. And yeah.
But you can look at that community and say, drive through the neighborhoods. Drive through the Stack Overflow neighborhood, and you tell me, is this a community that you would be proud to be associated with? And I mean, Joel and I, and anyone on our team, we're not going to build things that we're not ultimately proud of being on the internet. you know, that again, like, made the internet better. It's like, I'm proud to be associated with these things that we've created, and we're going to continue that. So I think you would probably be too, hopefully.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that was my main question. That was my one question I'm going to add to this conversation. But I would love to do a few more questions about maybe from Meta Stack Exchange.
So one of the things I kind of want to bring up, first of all, if you look on Meta.Stack Exchange right now, you're already seeing couple dozen right now. How many are there? 19 site proposals already.
There's a new one. There's 18 the last time I looked.
Yeah. So the first one was the first one to show up was the proposal for a firearm stack exchange. There was one I kind of liked and I want to bring up that I thought was really cool is that somebody suggested a law stack exchange for legal questions. And the original proposer, user 1440 of The Hurt, should I mention him by name? I don't know if I
should.
Sure.
Why?
Well, because I don't know if his name is public. His real name. Oh, yeah, it is. Chris Jenkin from Portland. And he said, hey, let's make a law stack exchange. And the target audience is anyone with legal questions. And he gave some example questions as, you know, I just got popped for my first felony. What are the next steps I should take? Are NDAs legally binding? How do I go about patenting my invention? My employer is breaking the law. How should I report it? So it's just, now this sounds to me like Yahoo Answers. If you went to the Yahoo Answers site and you looked at the legal questions that are showing up on there. This to me is very, very low value. There are already a million articles about each of these subjects on the internet. There's a nice automatically generated one on Mahalo and on Cpedia that is meaningless. There's probably a very, very good Wikipedia entries on these things, like, you know, whether NDAs are legally binding. What I proposed is something a little bit different. And I said, you know, let's try to make it more professional than that. You want to talk about law? All right, this is not a site for people that are interested in law or have legal questions. This is a site for lawyers and judges. And then I narrowed it down to U.S. So I said the topic is United States common law. So for you law mavens in the audience, that excludes Louisiana. And the target audience is lawyers and judges practicing in the U.S. at any level, federal, state appeals, etc. And an example question that I came up with was, does anybody know of a precedent where a plaintiff successfully sued a city for torts relating to cracks in a sidewalk that the city should have had reason to know about? So the reason I said that that's an example question, first of all, I picked an audience that was professional, that cares about this stuff at a much deeper level than the guy that just got busted for his first felony. Because those are the most important people to attract to the site. And the way you attract them to the site is by kind of guaranteeing that they're going to be having high-level conversations about their questions. They're not going to be swamped by a bunch of people that just got busted for their first felony and what should they do first. And it's just like when you go to Stack Overflow, the reason you go to Stack Overflow to ask your programming question is because there's a bunch of real programmers there. And they're there Monday through Friday. And they're not really there on the weekends because this is their job and they take this crap seriously. And on the weekends, they do other things. And you can ask your detailed technical question, whereas if you go to Yahoo Answers with your hard programming question, there's nobody there to answer it. Or if, and vice versa, if somebody comes into Stack Overflow and starts asking, you know, how to plug in their monitor, nobody's going to answer them. The question is going to be closed because the professionals are sick and tired of providing free tech support for people that don't know anything about computers. So look at the same thing from the perspective of lawyers, targeted at lawyers. And then when you have sample questions that you're thinking of, what are the questions on this site, you got to say, you got to use the magic language. You got to use the inside jargon. You got to say precedent and plaintiff and torts and so forth on the legal site. Because that way, when a real lawyer stops by the site, he'll immediately see a whole bunch of legal jargon and say, oh, wait a minute. This is a site for lawyers, not for everybody's uncle who has legal trouble. And then the lawyers will come to the site. And so basically what I wrote in my answer is, you know, look, there are 200 questions in the entire world that everybody has about the law. And they've already been asked on Yahoo Answers, and they have lots of answers there, and some of them are good, and some of them are bad, and I couldn't care less, and there are lots of articles about that. But there are 20 million questions that practicing lawyers have every single day about the long tail of the law, those detailed things that used to be a four-hour research project. And those are the ones that it would be a real service to the internet to get on there. In order to do that, you got to get the people that care about those 20 million questions, and those are the... those are lawyers. Those are professionals. So big speech, but I think my point is the sites we want to create with Stack Exchange are not just more Ning communities or more, you know, like, hey, let's talk about sociology and let's go in there and talk about alligators and what's your favorite zoo and what should I do with my kids. Let's talk about professional stuff. Let's talk about like deep technical knowledge that the internet is not that good at answering because it's just too deep, you know. And by deep, I mean there's 50 people in the world that care about the answer to that question. Let's make it so the internet can bring those 50 people together.
Wow.
End of speech. And that was
a speech.
My boys is why I believe that the world is banana shaped. It's from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's why I say that all the time.
Well, I think one concern that I brought up, and I mean, I understand the process, and I think every step of it is actually necessary. But I can see where people read it and go, oh my gosh, this is like communist, you know, Soviet area bureaucracy. You know? This is like what the movie Brazil is about, right?
Yep.
And I think part of that is you have to realize that launching a community is very, very difficult because any one person can start a blog. And if that person happens to be incredibly talented, that blog will succeed. All it takes is one person
writing
to make that
for
work.
5 years.
And and even then it takes, and like even if you're really good, you have to probably write for 6 months solid before people will finally find you, you know, and say, oh my gosh, this person's really good.
Yep. Yeah. So who cares how hard it is to create the site on Blogger? That's not even the point. The question is that first 6 months of work that you have to do. Right?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of you need a group of like-minded people to actually come together.
To help you.
And the example I like to give people is, okay, let's say you're going to go out for lunch with your coworkers. In the case I have my coworkers are cats. This doesn't work well for me. But Joel, you have coworkers. Let's say I know you have these wonderful catered lunches. But let's say something crazy happens. You're like, oh, let's go out for lunch.
Yeah.
So if it's just you and Michael or some other one or two other developers, going out for lunch is no big deal.
Right.
It's like you just pick a place and you go.
Yep.
But the minute the group gets to about the size of 10, going to lunch is a nightmare. Like friggin' nightmare.
Are you kidding? Yeah. This is why it was a miracle that the Israelites got out of Egypt in one day.
And that's just a really simple problem. It's like nobody really cares. Like, let's just go for lunch somewhere. It's not political. Nobody's going to get religious about it usually.
Yeah.
And even then, it's incredibly difficult. So the minute you have a group dynamic, you actually need this process. I swear, I know it looks like a lot, but everything that I know and everything that Joel knows about how communities work tells me that you need these steps.
Right.
Like you need... And as we do this process, we might decide, okay, some of these are too long, too short. We will certainly refine the process. But there's nothing that's in there that we don't believe is actually necessary to at the other end have a community that actually has some chance of actually working.
I got And I don't think it's that hard either, because what you're doing is you're recruiting a few other people who are interested and it's to vote for your proposal and to help you get it off the ground. And the process is designed so that you can build support for the site so that it works. It's a process. It's the beginning of a process. You know, we could make it easier to create a site so that anybody can create a site, and then there's just going to be a bunch of empty sites because all we're doing is – so basically all we're doing is we're saying, you know what? The site doesn't show up to the world until it's hit critical mass, right? So it's just as difficult as it always was. You're going to have to persuade people to go there and ask questions and answer questions. You always had to do that. You had to do that even when you were paying us. It's just it doesn't show up.
In a way, it's actually easier now because we're going to point our audiences at your site.
Yep.
I mean, we're going to essentially be publicizing.
Yep.
Every site that comes through is going to go through this vetting process through what's actually publicized.
Right.
And then as you come into the network, assuming you have content that's compatible, we can actually migrate questions from site to site. Site identities will be retained. Like we're working on like this grandiose single sign-on plan.
Mm-hmm.
We've already improved our matching. So if you log on with Google, which is what most people do, we can actually fingerprint you. We can actually, you know, fairly easily tell you're on six other sites in our network. And we'll be educating people. There'll be cross promotion. I mean, actually, ironically, this might end up being easier than just paying $129 a month and going at your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it actually will be easier. Let me give you an example. Somebody, I guess I'll try to anonymize him because he sent me a private email, so I don't really know if he wants to be publicized. But somebody had created a site on Stack Exchange, and it had one question. Nobody had ever gone there. And he said, you know what, I'm kind of worried about your new process because the site that I created would never have gotten created under your new system. And he said... My site is for a very narrow niche and a very specific group of people, and him. Just kidding. And under the old system, it got created because I went and signed up for it. And under the new system, I would have to get programmers essentially on Stack Overflow who are not really the audience for my site, and some tiny subset of them might be, but that's not the right audience to get excited about the site. And they're not going to. They're not going to come in and create it. So I'm concerned about the new process. And I wrote back to him and I said, listen, face reality here. Your site did not get created under the old system. Yes, you opened it. Yes, there's a URL, but nobody goes there. There's no questions. There's no answers. And he said, yeah, I was planning to get people in. I was, you know, when I was hoping to have some time later when I finish with this. I'm really busy with this startup that I'm working on right now. But when I was done with that, I was going to go recruit people and sign people up and do some marketing and spend some actual cash money getting people into the site and all that kind of stuff. I was planning to do that all, but you know, right now I'm busy with this other startup. And I said, you know what, the problem here is that you were trying to create the site and you kept telling yourselves, I got this other startup and this is my second startup. So it's not worth the money. I'm not going to do it because of the money reason. But when you look at why you wanted the site to exist, you wanted it to exist for altruistic reasons, because you really need this site, because you're going to get benefit from the site and you're going to help other people with this site. And that's why you wanted to create it, not for the money. And the money is making you think it is not worth going to the effort right now. But under the new system, here's what would happen. There would be no opportunity to make money. So you would never be thinking, is it worth the small amount of money I can make off of this site to work on it? You would just be thinking, do I need this site to exist because I need to make the world a better place by providing good answers and being able to ask questions on this important topic that is important to me? And under the new system, what's going to happen is you're going to go in there and you're going to find the other 6 or 12 or 10 programmers that are in the entire Stack Overflow community that have similar problems and care about this just as much as you. And all of them are going to get together with you and they're going to go to their friends and neighbors and other people that they know are in this community and get them to support the site. So now all of a sudden you're not alone trying to create the site and then deciding because it's not worth that much money to you that it's not a priority. Now you got a group of people that all really care about it, none of whom are in it for the money, all of whom are going to work their butts off to make the site get created. So my strong belief, I told this guy, is that in the current universe, your site did not get created. And in this alternate universe, I don't know if this is true, but in the future universe, it probably will, or at least it can. Again, I can imagine how it would, because you're going to have all those other enthusiasts who believe in the same ideas as you believe in helping you out.
Yeah. I mean, that's the flip side, and I think people aren't, I think, getting that quite yet.
Yeah.
But hopefully they will. Like, I think we might produce fewer sites this way, but I think we'll produce sites that are much more likely to actually make the internet better and survive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that trade-off. Now, as we get better at this process, you know, we're building a government, basically. One of the questions that came up, Joel, was like, how much ownership? Okay, they were like, okay, ownership is totally diluted. Why will people care about the site? And I want to mention a few technical things that we're going to do. First of all, there's going to be some process where if you were involved with the founding of the site, you may have some special privileges. At the very least, you'll have a badge. If you supported a site at startup and you followed through on that pledge for support. So when you pledge for support, we're going to have some metrics of measuring, okay, I said I will go on the site, I'll do a certain number of things. It's not onerous. It's not like we're asking you to do a lot. We just want to make sure you actually did what you said you were going to do. And if you follow through with that and the site succeeds, you will have a founder's badge at the very least. And we're also looking at, for people that come in early, there's a system where the people who are most invested in the site should be the moderators, because they're the most excited about the site, they want it to survive the most.
Right.
During the interim period, they are the de facto moderators.
Yeah.
Now, once the site gets more mature, you'll have elections and so on and so forth. But early on, you can't have elections. There's just not enough people.
Right.
So there will be, I think, at least some. And of course, there'll be the beta badge, like we historically have had. Anybody who comes in during the beta gets a badge and does something. But I just want to mention those few technical things. But I don't know, Joel, do you want to riff on like diluted ownership argument?
The fusion of responsibility, is that the one where all those people sat and watched some poor woman get murdered in Queens because they all thought?
Well, the argument is that okay,
that one.
Well, the argument is that now.
Sorry,
you know,
I was wondering which button you were pushing. Joel, speech 26.
The argument is that now, since people aren't paying, they're not as motivated to, you know.
Yeah,
make
no,
sure
I think it's. Oh yeah, yeah, and I believe it's exactly the opposite. There's an awesome TED speech about that, which we will link to in the show notes. But basically, my belief here is that if you are It's just like this guy that had an idea for a site and really wanted to do it, and actually believed that he could make a little bit of money doing it, but it just wasn't as much money as he could make at his day job. So he never really got off his butt. But he really cared about the site, and that's what started him. It wasn't really the money. If you asked him, do you really care about the money, he didn't. The trouble is when there's money associated with something, then it allows you to put values on things and ask yourself, is this worth my time? So, for example, you know, occasionally people will that write for magazines will call me up and say, Joel, would you write an article for us? And I say, no. And they say, we'll pay you, really. We'll pay you, you know, $5 a word. And I say, not for all the money in China. It doesn't matter. I don't want to write an article for your magazine. I'm busy. There is no amount that you can pay me. I mean, there probably is, but there's no reasonable amount that you can pay me to write an article for your magazine, because if I want to write something, it's because I want people to read it. Anyway, and yet I write articles for free on Stack Overflow and Metastack Exchange and these sites all the time.
Right.
If you were in some way paying me to answer those questions, I would have to ask myself, what is the right amount that you have to pay me? And can you imagine how much, you know, I mean, it's not just that it would be a lot. It's that I'd be constantly saying to myself, is this really worth $2.50? Is this really worth $5? The answer would always be no. But it's, is it worth it to help somebody with their problem, or to answer a question, or to influence the world, or to get some attention on my beautiful self? Yeah, that's worth it. So that's what it's all about, really, is just like literally by making it a voluntary, you know, these are just people helping each other out here. And by eliminating the entrepreneurial, like, capitalism and this is money, what we're doing is we're getting the people that actually care to be much more involved, and not the people that think that they might make a buck, but they don't really care because they can't really make a buck or whatever. So, so that's my speech about that. Hey, Robert, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have okay. What are when we announced this new process, we said if you have any questions, contact Robert. That's his whole job, is to sit there and answer all your questions and concerns, mostly for the people that had already created sites who are wondering about what's going to happen going forward. What kind of questions are you getting?
Well, the first wave of users were just very concerned that you know, that there was going to be a limited amount of time that they would be able to migrate their sites to the new system, and they wanted some clarification on how that would work. Mm-hmm. More and more users are just interested in, you know, how do I get started? You know, where's this site? How do I create my site? How can I get a head start? And I'm seeing more and more of that.
Cool. That was pretty quick.
You know, we started directing them to the Meta, and you can see now I think there's 18 new sites proposed.
Yep.
You know, and they know it's not official and that's not going to really get their site proposed, but they're very anxious to get this head start and to get feedback from the community, and you could see the enthusiasm just in those threads. Mm-hmm. The rest of them are just mostly just, you know, concerns about the new model and can I get my site created, and, you know, I only have a niche subject. You know, and when you start talking them through it, usually you get a very positive response.
Right. Right. So the basic answer is you can have a niche subject, because we're not going to create a site because the majority of people on Stack Overflow have deemed it worthy. We're going to create a site because it has critical mass. And critical mass is probably lower than you think. And so if you've got an idea for a site, so let's take some of these examples from these proposals. There's one that actually I thought was actually kind of neat. What was that one that's an Oracle thing? It's already scrolled off the front page.
Well, just click on the site proposal tag.
Yeah. Site proposal. There's 20 now. Jeez, these are coming in. Double Helix. That's a good one.
Is it the one?
Here it is. Hyperion. It's basically a Stack Exchange site for Oracle EPM products. All right. So I know I'm a basic programmer from the 1930s or something, but I have never heard of Oracle EPM. I don't even know what that is. But it's pretty clear that there is a huge community of people that are doing very, very deep stuff there. It's not really appropriate for whatever the heck it would be, server fault or super user or Stack Overflow or whatever it is. And they have, you know, very deep, probably technical problems. And there's probably a lot of overlap between them and programmers. So this is interesting that this is might be the first one or the second one to get proposed right after firearms. And it never would have occurred to us to create it. Never would have occurred to me to create it. And I'll bet you it's going to work really well. So let's say Justin, who proposed the site, thinks this is a great idea and wants to go ahead and do it. Pretty much all he has to do is describe the audience for that. And then he can just say, you know, basically Hyperion, you know, developers. And then he or other people who are also interested in this can submit some sample questions of what type of questions might be appropriate. And then we've got another part of the proposal phase where you say inappropriate questions, like these things are off topic, which might be pretty neat, just to sort of pre-establish some guidelines as to what's inside and what's outside the boundary of the questions and answers that will be on the site. And they'll make their proposal, and then let's say that there are people on Stack Overflow. That'll be awesome. All you really got to do is find enough that we can be convinced that the site is going to be alive. And I don't know what that number is exactly. And we're gonna figure that out by looking at the data, and we're gonna figure that out empirically. Like if we get 200 people saying that they'll participate in the site, it works. But if we get 50, it doesn't work, then we're going to set the cutoff at 200. And if it turns out that people create lots of sites, but they don't really, they trail off after a long time, then we might increase the reputation that's required of those people that say that they'll go to the site before we actually decide that that might actually work. But if you can't find people on Stack Overflow that are interested in talking about that, or if you can only find a few, you can still go to the outside world, and you can go to the people in your community that don't know about Stack Overflow and say, hey, I'm trying to create a Q&A site, which is what you could always do previously. What you had to do previously is you had to find your own people and bring them in and have them vote for the site. So if anything, I think it's going to be a little bit easier because we're giving you kind of a focused place to help find other people that will be interested in the site so that you don't have to do all the legwork yourself.
So I have another question for Robert. Robert, we've all sort of brought up our little questions that people have asked us that we thought were particularly interesting about this. Do you have anything that you wanted to highlight or talk about? I know you've been very, very active on Metastack Exchange answering people's questions.
Well, you know, just what we were just talking about, I just answered a question on Meta. The user was concerned that because this is going to be sort of spiraling out from a group of essentially Stack Overflow people, that he would never get his niche site created, There's just no users that are willing to, you know, support his site. And I said, you know, compared to the old system, the whole idea that he would be able to put this site online, you know, build it and they will come was just a big failure for most sites.
Yeah.
And I said, that now that you're sort of building, you're proposing your site to a community, you know, in a larger community, that, you know, it only really does take a few, supporters. And that really all we're asking you to do is to show that there's an enthusiastic, committed community to just even bother, you know, starting it. And, it's really that simple. Mm-hmm. And, and as far as, you know, the supporters having to be from Stack Exchange, as these sites become, more and more popular, more and more created, the users, the experienced Stack Exchange users will spiral out quickly from that sort of programming center. And those users, when they become experienced, they'll be able to contribute and support, you know, more and more diverse communities. And
this thing is going to go mainstream very, very quickly. I mean, Twitter started at South by Southwest, right, among the Uber geeks. And it is now about as mainstream as any technology can get. Facebook started with Harvard students. And you might say, well, how the hell am I going to take these elite Ivy League, you know, white brats who are on a dating site and make that site popular? And I was just blown away the last time I went to Israel and every taxi driver was using Facebook all day long. So everybody keeps coming back to 6 degrees of separation, but you really are only 6 degrees separated from pretty much most people. I think that theory was slightly disproven, but you'll get there very, very quickly. If not in the first wave, then in the second wave or the third wave. And I think that we will actually spread. And what I'm actually looking for personally is not another Yahoo Answers with a bunch of people asking each other how to be more popular in junior high school. I'm looking for the site with professionals asking each other the deep, dark, technical secrets and the hard things that they don't know how to answer.
Expert answers to your question.
Yep. And expert, by which we mean like actual expert, not just and not because we hired them and not because we know who they are and not because we decided who they are, but because those experts are on there participating in the site because that's where they get answers to their questions.
And the beautiful thing about this software is that if you can't restrict who can answer questions, but if you don't get an expert answer, it's very quickly pushed down the list and the best answers always float right to the top. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, you know, you can really tell the difference between an expert answer and a, you know, a sort of, man on the street sort of just spouting off his latest theories on something.
Yep.
So one thing I do want to mention is that let me again draw some boundaries. So with sites like Dig and Reddit, I feel like Dig and Reddit have never... Dig to some degree has been able to do this, but I think Reddit, like, not at all, is to escape the engineering ghetto where, I mean, we love programmers. Programming is what we do. Programming is what we know. But I think to make a legitimate case, you've built a tool that's useful to the wider internet, you have to be able to spread beyond topics that only geeks would love. Right. I mean, it can be geek-related. It can be geeky or geekish. But I really feel like to be successful, we've got to prove that we can escape the geek ghetto. Yep. And believe me, I love the geek ghetto. I spend all my time in it. I love it. But it reached a certain point where it's like, if I see one more XKCD cartoon, I'm going to snap, right? It's like, sometimes you want something different. And I feel like the cool thing about programmers, it comes from a place of optimism. Like, I think programmers are, I mean, I love programmers. I'm a programmer. I have a lot of other interests that aren't necessarily programming related.
That's right.
That I would love to talk about. Yeah, like Rock Band, and I'm also a gamer. Now, granted, I'm such a hardcore geek, my stuff tends to be related, but like guns, like I'm not into guns. I don't know anything about guns. It might be cool. I don't know. I would love to see us explore that topic if that's something we're interested in. And then I feel like that the whole 6 degrees of separation thing you talked about hopefully will play out where eventually you'll begin attracting people who are just like, oh, hey, I'm a gun enthusiast too. I don't know anything about programming, but I found this community. Yeah. And then hopefully the success of this new site creation tool that we're talking about, in my mind, will be how many people we can bring in that aren't part of the existing community.
Right.
That's, to me, a really key metric of how well this new site.
Well, I'm sort of looking at it as when do we go mainstream? Like how many? It's probably years, but how many years does it take before there is sort of mainstream awareness of Stack Exchange at the same level as there is programmer awareness of Stack Overflow right now? And that's a pretty tall, you know.
That's a big goal.
That's a big goal.
But I support it. And honestly, I would be happy if we just got far enough that we review it as like, okay, this is a really – you've created a new tool. This is the screwdriver. I've never seen a screwdriver before. That's amazing. It's really good at doing this thing of, you know, the screwing in screws versus the hammer that I used before. If we can be viewed as like one of the best screwdrivers, like the exemplary screwdriver – that's the model for everybody else, then to me that has kind of accomplished the goal. Even if it's not us personally creating all these sites, I would just be happy to just advance the state of discussion on the internet. And I've said this many times, but I really believe this. Like I just ultimately want the better engine to be out there and people to have mainstream awareness that there is the screwdriver out there now that we created. Mm-hmm. That they can put that in their toolbox. They don't have to buy it from us. You could buy the Sears Craftsman or you could buy the True Value Hardware one.
Yeah.
And but there is a screwdriver.
Oh, I shouldn't say that. I'm going to have to go delete that from the podcast. A lot of patents here, people. A lot of patents.
Yeah. So let's. Do we have any more questions specifically?
There were a couple. I don't think they're that. I don't think they're that interesting. Somebody asked, "Why don't you just open source the software and be done with it?" And you know, and
that
we
does
definitely
nothing to advance the community, though.
Correct, because there is an open source version. It's Shapito. There's a couple others, I think, too. Just writing the software does not advance community, and it in fact, I actually think it harms it. Not before you kill me, and I know there's already a bomb in my mailbox at home. one of the things that I think harms community is when you fragment it. And so the only way you're going to get an answer to really difficult questions of like, you know, in 1938, if you took TWA from Kansas City to Albuquerque, did you have to stop over in Amarillo, right? Somebody knows the answer to that. I actually know the answer to that because there's a TWA advertisement on my wall that answers that question. But not that many people know the answer to that question, and it's going to be somebody who cares. And so how do we meet up? How do those two people meet? On the internet, if you create 400 awesome aviation, airliner, aeronautics websites, which is the current state of affairs, then the chances that when I go to any one of them, I'm going to find somebody that has this poster on their wall are very, very slim. If you can create one sort of centralized place that is the airliner history buff or plane spotting website or whatever it may be, or even just the Transworld Airlines fans, and it's the site, not a site, then you're much more likely to get your answers to those difficult questions. And that's why I feel like, if anything, if we just made our software open source and relied on that to spread it, you would get a million communities. I mean, think about what would have happened if Facebook, in the Harvard days, had decided to make Facebook open source. Well, what would have happened is a kid at Yale would have downloaded it and installed it, and there would have been the Yale Facebook. And then all of a sudden, every kid in every college would be doing this. And now there are a million Facebooks, and that's awesome. Now, how do you connect to your friends at Harvard if you go to Yale? Well, you can't under that system. So making, and in fact, by the time you got to Dartmouth, there would be four different kids that all set up Facebooks, and they would all be competing on campus. They would be like, we have the most hot girls, and we have the cutest jocks, and whatever the case may be. I don't know what they're going to, I don't know what benefit they're going to compete. But that's nice, but there's really something about the network effects, about getting us all in the same communications platform. It doesn't have to be ours, but if we can create it, that's the best way to do it. I mean, we're not trying to create software so that anybody can make a telephone system. We're trying to create the telephone system so that people can call each other up. It's a natural monopoly. In fact, I think we should go to the government and get a monopoly on Q&A sites. I just had a great idea.
Well, part of being a part of the fabric of the internet is I don't really feel like we need to own everything. I'm very comfortable. You know, if we decide we're only good at a certain number of things, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't actually have a problem with that. And I think the pie is so large that I've never really viewed this as like for us to win, others have to lose.
No, that is correct. But
really
I do think that
that's true.
You're right. But I do think that when we expend effort, we recognize the value of these network effects. So if there already is a Stack Overflow-like site, whether it's using our software or some open source software or somebody else's software, like Doctype might be an example, although they don't have that much traffic. But they're a site on a certain topic. And if there is a site like that that's not using our software, that has critical mass, then it's actually a bad thing for us to go and try to take over that audience, because we're just going to splinter it, and we may or may not win. What we need to do is sort of, in those cases, we actually do want to sort of back off. Whereas in other areas, what we find is just a bunch of people using vBulletin and PHBBB, and they're all over the place, and there's 18 of them, and those are the cases where we kind of want to come in and make one big site. We don't want 15 people to make 15 little sites.
And you know, as you were talking, I realized another metric of success is if we can just organically find other communities that are willing to migrate to our platform, just say, oh, you know, this is an open process. We have an existing community.
Yeah.
And some of us would like to do it on this new platform.
Yeah.
That would also be another indication of success. And I'm wondering if we need to lobby or at least make them aware that it's there. I mean, I wonder how
well, let me tell you,
we should be pushing that.
Jeff, let me tell you my belief about these other communities. And this is from our experience that we had with jQuery. My belief is that if you go to an existing community somewhere, like let's say jQuery was using Google Groups, and they say, we hate Google Groups, we want to use your software. Your software is way awesomer. And we say, all right, great, let's migrate you onto our software or onto our platform. Then they say, terrific. Now, here's a list of features that we had on Google Groups. Do you have every single one of these features? And then we say, well, no, it doesn't really work that way. We don't send email, for example, because that's not what we do. And then they say, well, now, I don't use that email feature, but there's a bunch of people in our community that are really devoted to getting everything in their inbox, and they do not want to go to the web because they use Opera on Linux, and it sucks. And we say, okay, maybe it's not for them. Those communities inevitably, when they ask their members, shall we move to this new software? There is a small number of members who do not want cheese moved under any circumstances. And they say, do not move the cheese under any circumstances, no matter how much better it's going to be. And no matter how small they are or how few they are, they're very vocal, because something is being threatened to be taken away from them, they believe. And they usually win those debates, the naysayers. So the best
we're even
do,
seeing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We're even seeing that within our community where, you know, we talk about this new platform and a lot of users are asking, like, will my site work exactly like it does right now? I went through a lot of, you know, tweaking and color changes and this and that, you know, and they haven't even seen the new platform yet. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know?
People just want to keep doing what they're doing. And communities especially become conservative because they don't take a vote of should we shut this down and move. They say, let's be reasonable here. We're all friends. What would we all agree upon? And the answer is nothing. The only thing we all agree upon is the world being exactly the way it is, because you all came to this old vBulletin software and you come back to this vBulletin software and you obviously agree on the vBulletin software because that is why we are here. But anything different is, it's almost like Cantor's diagonal proof. Anything that you change is just going to remove some people from the people that are willing to move. And so you can't move a community. What you can do, however, is say, all right, we're opening another thing. We've got the vBulletin thing for discussion, community, conversation, socializing, even asking subjective questions, shooting the breeze, announcing when somebody important in the community has a baby, you know, going off topic once in a while, telling some jokes, job listings, awesome. But for questions and answers, we're going to create this additional community on the side based on Stack Exchange. And then what we tend to see happening, and I've seen several examples of this, is that the Stack Exchange does really well and grows and grows and grows, and the old site kind of stays steady, or maybe it, you know, it declines a little bit. Doesn't never really goes away, but the Q&A moves onto a platform that's more appropriate for it, and the community conversation discussion stuff stays back where community conversation discussion makes sense. That's what I think is going to be the most likely case. So I don't actually believe that it is worth any amount of money or any amount of users to try to persuade that last person that is just dedicated to the old Google Groups way of doing things because he wants everything in his inbox. I you know, we're not going to do that feature that gives you everything in your inbox.
Well, I think I agree with everything you just said. And I think when I proposed that, what I was really proposing is attracting the people that are interested in actually trying something new. Oh, yeah. I don't think we would try to turn off the old community. I think maybe that's what you're getting at is
right.
They will just run in parallel and then one will...
Yep.
I mean, again, we don't have to survive at the expense of other things. I mean, the people that like our model, which I view as a very information-centric model, will migrate to that model. And those who want a place to socialize and hang out and have a backroom conversation will maybe stay with the other engine. But what you got to realize is that I think our engine does a very, very good job of extracting information from a community. So you're going to end up with maybe a community on one side that has a lot of the good information extracted and is going to eventually become dominant, because I really believe that, I don't know, people just want information, and that the scent of information is what attracts really high quality people, in my opinion.
Possibly. I mean, I think one thing that might happen is that you get the people that like to shoot the breeze in one place and they're having fun and they're the ham radio operators and they enjoy meeting people in their career and their profession. And maybe for us, that's Meta. And then on the other side, you get the business, like, all right, just the facts, ma'am. Here's the question. Here are the answers. Here's the question. Here's the answers. And I think some people may justifiably say that when this happens, you lose something. I mean, we got that email from the guy in the New Zealand .NET users group a long time ago saying, oh, you completely eviscerated the New Zealand .NET users group because we used to ask each other .NET questions, and everybody from the New Zealand .NET users group has now moved to Stack Overflow, and there's nobody left to talk to, and I can't make friends from New Zealand who are .NET programmers, which I used to be able to do.
Sure. And I think there's some communities where there's not really a core of information anyway. They're just mostly about, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, sure. Oh, my gosh.
It's just, you got to realize what our engine is good at. So if you point a community like that at our engine, they'll just like shrug and say, "What? Why would I want to do that?"
Right. Politics.
Understandably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
in when I was in college, the biggest Usenet news group was Talk Politics Mideast. And it's just a bunch of people debating Middle Eastern politics in a non-productive way, paragraphs after paragraphs. Every day I would log on to Usenet, and I subscribe because it was fun, but I would log on to Usenet, and there would be, you know...
I subscribed because it was fun.
Yeah,
wow.
I was 19, 22.
Yeah.
There would be a question about... There would be... you'd log on to Usenet, and you'd be like, all right, comp.sys.ibm.pc, 24 new topics. You know, whatever the other groups were, you know, soc.yale, 8 new topics. Talk.politics.mideast, 9,246 new topics. It was always just like disproportionately crowded compared to everything else. It just swallowed everything else up, and there would just be people there screaming and yelling and just writing these long polemic screeds. People would write the longest things in the world. It was truly amazing.
Well, I think my argument is...
And will never happen on Stack Overflow.
Well, my argument is, like, imagine if all that effort was being expended completely pointlessly on debating Middle East politics was used to create useful information for other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be pretty amazing, right? I mean, that's really what Stack Overflow is about. It's like, we want to have some fun. I mean, we are tweaking the dials, and I had to have a whole blog post about, okay, it's like, I could have some fun. Because actually, it's gotten very strict on Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
Do you remember in the beginning, people were asking, oh, what's the favorite music to program to?
Yeah.
This was like an acceptable question early on in the life cycle of the site.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, that would get closed like instantly within like 60 seconds. Yeah, within seconds, literally, that would be closed if you asked that now on Stack Overflow.
I'm going to.
So, yeah, so some of this is okay. And I think if you can ask it the right way, and you know, we don't want to be all business, but it is true that we're trying to say, look, all that time you spent debating this and that, like, there's ways to turn that into useful information that actually doesn't need to be thrown away in a year because it doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not shy about trying to convince people that that's sort of the right thing to do. But I'm willing to tweak the dials, too. I mean, there's certain amounts of fun we tolerate, certain amounts of discussion we tolerate. As long as you can stay focused on the information, I think there's ways to tweak the dial for different communities. And as we get fold in new communities, the engine itself is going to evolve. We're going to adapt and add new features and, you know, make it more, you know, copacetic for these communities. I mean, it's not going to be a fully rigid system. It's going to be a managed system in that we're going to try to city plan it, right, mm-hmm. as city planners. But we realize that different cities have different needs. So I'm somewhat flexible in that regard, too.
All right. Well, that's pretty much it for our special interim interregnum podcast XXX edition.
That's right. Extreme.
I don't have any announcements because this is, you know, this is not the podcast.
Yeah, we don't have any announcements because we have no idea what we're going to do next.
Yeah.
We have no idea if there's even going to be a podcast anymore.
We'll work on it. We're working on it.
Yeah. We'll figure something.
Yeah. By the way, I did have to completely rewire all my gear for this podcast. Every time.
Hopefully it got recorded. I'm hoping this all got recorded.
Oh, yeah. Now that pretty much always happens. But I literally have to – I look at this big mess of M-Audio mobile pre-USBs and digital recorders and microphones and headsets and mixers that is on my desk. And I just say, all right, this wasn't working last time. And I unplug every single cable from every single device, turn all the knobs to zero, and then start setting it up again one step at a time. It's always different. That was the podcast. Thank y'all very much. Stay tuned a transcript wiki. We can have a transcript wiki and show notes as usual. The show notes will be at blog.stackoverflow.com with links to some of the things that we mentioned on the site. If you're interested in the new Stack Exchange system, that was a blog post on blog.stackexchange.com, not Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange. And the discussion of this and the proposals for new sites right now are all happening on meta.stackexchange.com, meta.stackexchange.com.
Right.
Did you get that all?
And then keep an eye out for Robert. He is our community moderator.
So. Robert Cartano is our community moderator. He'll be on there, and you can email him at rcartano@...
So give him like a vampire zombie poke when you see him.
Yeah. Throw a cow over the moon in his general direction.
That's right.
Okay, the end.
That's it. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to Stack Overflow with Jeff Atwood and Joel Spolsky.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Joel Spolsky. Our website editor was Jeff Atwood. The series producer is Jeff Atwood.
This is Phil Windley. I hope you'll join me next time for another great presentation from Stack Overflow here on IT Conversations.